This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and Sirius XM Channel 371.
All right, the alliance has been the hot button topic as we get a little bit closer to kickoff, and really, truly, one of the great professional journalists who's been all over this story, amongst others, is Nicole Auerbach. Nicole, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Always a pleasure. I know Red's running around there somewhere. We'll get to him later, but let's get to
Well, love you, see.
Oh, you got him. Look at the big man. Look at that.
There he is.
See, you look great. Treat in hand. There you go. Dogs galore. Love it. All right, let's get to the alliance. Supposedly, again, there's a lot of supposedlies here. Later this week, sometime next week, the formal announcement. But where are we today on this Monday, big picture with the alliance?
Well, we're still in the same place, which is that these are three conferences in the ACC and the Big Ten and the Pac-12 that have been in constant communication since news broke that Texas and Oklahoma were leaving the Big 12 for the SEC. Everyone's been looking at options. I mean, we've had a lot of conversations as media members, as fans, about who should add who, right? But that's not the only option. There are other ways to achieve goals. You know, if the Pac-12 is looking at its footprint and wanting to play in better time slots and recruit more nationally, like, there are options in ways to do things in something like an alliance that aren't necessarily requiring you to blow up your whole conference model or cut your pie another way by adding a full member. And I think that unless you have somebody like a Notre Dame or a USC that is gettable, this is a really interesting alternative and option for these leagues to align together to kind of try to become a voting block on major issues, to actually, you know, look at some scheduling opportunities in football, men's basketball, women's basketball, what other sports you might be doing. But really, this is about alignment during a really rocky time in college sports. And I think if you talk to anyone anywhere in the country, the idea of consolidating more power in the Southeastern Conference is scary. I think the healthiest thing for college sports is to have balance across the country in different regions, in different conferences. So the idea behind this is you have that, and you have three leagues in three different time zones, three different parts of the country, aligning about the collegiate model, about what they value, and kind of providing that checks and balances to the SEC and just making a major power move in the last month.
Nicole, we talked a lot last week about the AAU, and I know fans want to talk games and scheduling and the fun stuff, but I don't think you can underestimate the lineage between the ACC, the Big Ten, and the Pac-12 from an AAU standpoint when those three conferences represent 40% of the big picture. And when you've got the chancellors and presidents on board, quite frankly, it makes it a lot easier to move forward despite whatever the tentacles may be of this alliance.
Well, that's the key. And that number you just quoted was something that Penn State Athletic Director Sandy Barber quoted over the weekend as part of her answer about this very topic. So if that number is just like readily available, it's clearly something that people are talking about. And we have to remember with this, it's like last year, too. I think we learned that like the major decisions in college sports are decided by presidents and chancellors. So the academic level and prestige and value of these schools matters quite a bit to those presidents. And so that is going to be a major factor. When they say that they want to be part of something with like-minded institutions, it's broad-based sports offerings. It's offering as many sports as possible, not the minimum to become Division I, but, you know, really truly valuing, you know, women's sports and opportunities and scholarships and as many Olympic sports as possible. And also the academic profile of these schools. These are schools that they want to be associated with. And that is something that's really important. We know it's really, really important in the Big Ten. They've never admitted a member that wasn't an AAU school, but it's also very important, you know, in the Pac-12 and the ACC as well. And that's where you have people saying like-minded. That's where this comes from. And I think that is the key as you think about this, because it's not just an athletic alliance, but you're talking about and future NCAA governance issues, playoff issues, all of these things. And presidents are going to be involved in those decision-making. So they want to be around presidents like-minded that value the full institutions the way that they do. And I know that doesn't sound super exciting, but that is how these decisions get made.
By the way, we lost Red, but apparently we have found Wes Durham. I don't know if that's a coincidence, but Wes is now back with us.
And I'm wearing red, so there you go. That's all I got for you. Nicole, last week I used an analogy where I guess in the big landscape I said the SEC threw the first punch, and now these three conferences, by maybe putting this together, are counterpunching. And while I totally agree with the AAU symbiotic type relationship that the conferences have, it can't go without saying we're talking about three commissioners that have, you know, combined been on the job maybe less than 3.5 years. How much of that is playing a role in this in your mind?
Well, it's definitely a factor that's important to mention, because two of these commissioners, Kevin Warren and George Kliavkoff, weren't working in college athletics before this, so they have not gone through a round of realignment. And the last time that Jim Phillips did it, he did it as an athletic director in the Big Ten. So I think that's why you had them immediately contact each other and talk to each other and working on building their relationships. George Kliavkoff is like 6 weeks into the job. I mean, they're just trying to get to know him right out of the gate. But I think you also have a lot of strong leaders in those three leagues. You have people really trying to, you know, help understand what these conferences are about, what are their priorities, and all of the conversations that all of these commissioners have had since the hiring process, since day one, have been about the future of college sports, because we've been in such a transformative time. So, you know, like George Kliavkoff, day one on the job, had his take about conference college football playoff expansion. That was right out of the gate. That was one of the first things he said. So they have had to work through their stances on these issues. I will say, an alliance where you are aligning yourself potentially as a voting bloc, you value certain things about the collegiate model you want to protect going into this NCAA constitutional convention, playoff expansion, perhaps you want to align yourselves to delay that and to get more answers and more input on the model before it gets enacted. All of these things make a lot of sense, and you don't have to blow up the whole thing, add a member that maybe doesn't fit perfectly or geographically or whatever it is, that maybe doesn't bring enough value to make it a ton of sense, right? Like, this is an option here to, as you said, Wes, have a counter move without having to add a full member. And I think that's what's really interesting, because there we haven't really seen options like this. Like, the Pac-12 and the Big Ten tried to do a scheduling alliance last time that fell apart based on the number of conference games. But this does really feel like it can be the move in response to what the SEC did if these three leagues do stay aligned on major issues.
Nicole, when this was first leaked out, and Max did a great job, Max Olson of The Athletic, that Friday night when this story broke, are you surprised that they've been able to move so quickly? Or do you think they all had a sense that, hey, September 28th, when everybody gets in the room to talk about the college football playoff expansion, we have to have our act together from that perspective? I'm just curious, from a timing standpoint, are you surprised it happened this quickly?
Well, I think everyone in these leagues wanted to both take some time to let the dust settle a little bit from Texas and Oklahoma and just get the landscape, because that was so shocking and it blindsided so many people across the country. You couldn't make a move immediately. So I think it makes sense that we've been about a month since then, right? And people have been having conversations. People within all three of these leagues wanted their commissioners to be patient and to not rush into expanding, adding full members without vetting this process. So I think it makes sense that you've had people in all these leagues really hyper-focused on this, about just expansion in general, conference realignment in general, looking at these issues to get to the point of making a decision. I do think September 28th, the CFP meetings, is a deadline that is out there for a lot of people. And these commissioners have all said that they want to get feedback from their whole memberships by that point. I also think it would be nice to do something before the start of the season, right? Like, we're, you know, very close at the start of the season. You can make an announcement about this, and it's about the future of college football. It's about the future of college sports. And the season's about to start, and it kind of gets that ball rolling. But the hard deadlines, as you mentioned, the CFP meetings, the end of September, and the NCAA Constitutional Convention.
There she goes. Stuck in space.
Whoops.
Nicole Robot.
She might be back.
Here
we go. We're combining forces here, right?
Technology is a beautiful thing, isn't it? Wes, you know, seriously, keeping your seat warm so you can get back here in the basement together, because technology is just fantastic. Gotta love it.
I want to I did want to follow up on this, and if we get Nicole back, maybe we can do this. The curious element in this. Okay, good. Thank you. I'm glad to have you back in the process. The idea here of the athletic directors' cooperation. We know what it's been like in the ACC. Jim Phillips has already done his listening tour of the 15 institutions. I think George Kliavkov did the same thing in the Pac-12 very quickly once he took over office. Kevin Warren certainly knows how his ADs and presidents feel because he went through the pandemic last year. He's got some established relationship. Why do I get the sense that the next level of this kind of decision-making with these three leagues is coming from the athletic director's chair? Because as Mark said last week, Nicole, the AAU deal galvanizes the CEO position across the board, seemingly.
I think it's both. I think that they're making a conscious effort to have ADs in the process. I think they're the ones on the ground. They're the ones experiencing this day to day. And there were a lot of decisions made by the NCAA during the pandemic, NCAA on NIL, a number of different topics that basically cut out athletic directors from decision-making. That was one of the things during the pandemic. A lot of decisions had to be made at the presidential level, and ADs didn't feel like they were part of that process. And they were the ones actually implementing policies, actually doing the testing, talking to their athletes about how they felt. So that is one of the reasons that they're involved in this. They're the ones who live it every single day. So I think you've seen a really conscious effort from these conferences to include representation from ADs and presidents and trying to get it varied throughout their league and throughout their regions so that there is that working relationship. Because think about some of the criticism that we've seen or issues that we've seen with commissioners in other leagues in the past. You know, you had the ADs were not happy with Kevin Warren with the pandemic. Again, lack of communication, decision making. The ADs in the Pac-12 weren't huge fans of Larry Scott, right? Those were guys that were prioritizing relationships with presidents right out of the gate. So you need to have that balance and really get to know, you know, you have to have good relationships with your coaches too, even though they're not the ones going to be making this decision. But that's why there's that balance between ADs and presidents, even if the ultimate vote is going to be the presidents.
Nicole, I think Jack Swarbrick and Notre Dame are really in a pretty good spot, right? I mean, they're sitting there, they love their independence. I know Jim Phillips is still courting, going, hey, listen, you know, football be a good fit for you here. You know, that's going to continue. But if this alliance gets off the ground, and apparently it's going to this week, next week, when they make their announcement, where does Notre Dame fall in all this? Because when you look at a Notre Dame football schedule, they've got a great relationship with the ACC. They play multiple Big Ten teams. They play multiple Pac-12 teams. It just seems quite frankly like a perfect fit for the Irish moving forward. Where are they in the big picture, though?
Yeah, I don't think much changes. I mean, the only things that would ever really force Notre Dame to change what they do and the way that they do it is a lack of access to the college football playoff, which under this 12-team proposal that is moving forward, even if it's going to be a little, you know, stifled and delayed possibly to implement, still gives them access, direct access to make the playoff. And then if there was no way to schedule anyone else and they had to be part of a conference to find teams to play. But even with this scheduling alliance, you aren't talking about wiping out everyone's entire non-conference schedules, right? Like Notre Dame will still have their traditional teams that they want to play, and they'll be able to do that. So I don't think anything changes. And this is part of the reason there hasn't been that impetus for Notre Dame to have to join a conference, because they're able to schedule who they want and they can make the playoff. And unless, you know, either of those things changes, they're just fine doing what they want. And they value that independence so much that they're willing to do it for less money than it would be to join a conference.
All right. Last thing from me. I know we are kind of from the standpoint of we could dive into media rights. We could dive into, you know, how many games and all that. But that's just more speculation on top of the things we've already been talking about. In terms of current day news, anything now today, between now and when we get some formal confirmation of this, or any other additional details you think will happen before kickoff?
Well, I just think, you know, people are curious how specific it's going to be able to be, because, you know, the conversations are so much broader than just scheduling like one football game a year. It is about governance issues. You know, there's talk about, you know, how do we approach college football playoff expansion? Do you want to look at, you know, from these three leagues perspective, do you want to look at like scholarship limits for Olympic sports? Do you want to look at gambling issues and other things where they could sort of set policies in a decentralized NCAA. And also scheduling stuff is really hard to nail down, as we know. It's why we see games announced, you know, 10 years out. So I don't know how specific this is going to go. There's so many details that need to work out, but it's like a public support that you're aligned, that you're working on stuff together. And so that's what I'm curious. You know, I've had so many different conversations with people in all three leagues about all the things that they feel are most important about this. But the question is, like, what will that kind of public acknowledgement actually include? I don't know. But the key is, again, that it's a countermeasure to what the SEC just did in becoming a mega conference with 16 members and adding Texas and Oklahoma.
One more question, Nicole. Mm. I mentioned this to Wes. Shane Lyons, the athletic director of West Virginia, joined me on the radio show on Friday afternoon. And when I asked him about the Alliance news, he said he was disappointed, rightfully so, right? They didn't get a chance to have a seat at the table. What do you think happens to the eight that are left with the Big 12? Because those are viable programs with great fan bases and do generate money and revenue. It's just hard for me to believe that they would just be kind of floating out there like a little island while the SEC's done a great job getting Oklahoma and Texas, while the Alliance does a great job, you know, forming that bond. What happens to these Big 12 teams? What do you think, big picture?
Well, that's the big question, I think, in terms of pressing things that were waiting to happen. I mean, can they and will they stick together as eight and try to retain being a Power Five conference? Will they try to add from the AAC? I mean, they already know that their value is going to go down. We've saw Bob Boolsby tell the Texas State Senate that it will go down about 50% without Texas and Oklahoma. I think there's a lot of people who would like them to force Texas and Oklahoma to ride out the length of the grant of rights and be in this league for four more years and really wring every drip out of them. But I think we're gonna have to see. I think there's a lot of people in that league that are disappointed about news of this alliance being left out of something like this and clearly, you know, kind of now dropping a peg in the pecking order. But, you know, do they stay together? Do they continue to try to make their cases to get added to other conferences? But, you know, does anyone want a Texas block of schools? You know, do people want these members that may not bring, you know, aren't a slam dunk like a Notre Dame or USC would be? So that's where I'm very curious. I mean, I think, you know, you've got to try to stay together. You've got to try to add the top American programs and see what happens from there. But, you know, it's really uncertain. And I do think floating in the wind is probably the most accurate way to describe those programs. And it's bizarre to see you've got the defending national champs in men's basketball, Kansas basketball in this group. Iowa State's about to have best season, you know, highest expectations that they've ever had in football. And all of this is happening to them. But, you know, it just speaks to where college sports are today and where decisions are being made about, you know, who people would pay for to stream games and things like that.
Keep up the great work.
Tell you what, it's been a heck of a summer vacation for you, Auerbach. You've done a great job. I hope you've enjoyed, you know, like 3-4 weeks off in the summer to get you ready for the fall.
Yeah, definitely like 3 days. And I heard Red will just say goodbye before he departs. Bye.
Unbelievable.
Red's awesome.
Unbelievable.
Love Red.
He's a ham for the camera. Thanks, Nicole. Take care.
Thanks, guys.
You bet. Nicole Auerbach covers college football for The Athletic. So what do we glean there? Athletic directors playing a bigger role in this? I don't think you and I are surprised to hear that.
Here's what you gather from that. Anybody who would make any kind of comment, good, bad, or indifferent, it's still early in the process. It sounds like they're getting there. She described all the tentacles that are out there. It could involve everything from governance to power to money to scheduling. There's so many things that are going on. Like I said, I'm curious to hear what the formal announcement's going to be. I do think big picture, you know, if they can pull all of that together and work as one, which is to be determined. I mean, listen, we could go back a year ago, Wes, if I would have said, hey, it's early August, COVID, we playing football or not? ACC, Big Ten, Pac-12, what's the answer? The answer was Big Ten, no. Pac-12, no. ACC, yes, sir. Because we're going to work with the Big 12 and the SEC. My point with all this is, regardless of the topic, college football playoff expansion, how should we do scholarship? You pick it. When you put that many smart, powerful people in the room, they're going to have an opinion. And, you know, sometimes I think the Alliance, if they get this off the ground, there will probably be times with what works for the Pac-12 might not work for the ACC or Big Ten or whatever the combination may be. So, you know, this is still a work in progress. And we are watching whatever this new transformation is of college sports from the SEC and being a power broker, adding Oklahoma and Texas with their football programs, which is great, to the potential of the ACC, the Big Ten, and the Pac-12 doing their thing, which I think has huge upside, even though we don't know what the details are, to what happens to the Big 12. You know, is there more expansion? Do they dissolve? I mean, nobody knows the answers to these questions. So, you know, grab your popcorn, get ready for football. And, oh, by the way, one of the great college soap operas is taking place with the NCAA, whatever this transformation is. And, oh, by the way, we get games. And we've got ourselves in a pandemic still. So, I mean, goodness gracious, what more do you want to talk about? It's unbelievable.
Yeah. Well, and it's, you know what? We can sit back and watch the games, let the business take care of itself as we move through the next month or so. Next 5 weeks, pretty interesting time in college football and college athletics from the business and governmental side. And then we get into the constitutional Congress, if you will, of the NCAA, which, let's be honest, Pac, may have something to do with their ultimate survival, right?
No question.
If that doesn't go well, there's a possibility that organization fails to exist.
But you know what? Fans across the country are thinking three things, three words. Kick the pig. They are ready for football. I mean, hey, this stuff has given us all summer to talk about name, image, and likeness and transfer portal and the meltdown of the NCAA. And can you believe what OU and Texas just did? Hey, can you believe these three leagues are going to get there? Who knows, right? I mean, it's given us unbelievable fodder for 3 or 4 months here down the road. But at the end of the day, everybody watching this show, watching any network that involves college sports is interested in one thing. It's week zero. Next week is week one. Kick the pig. Let's get to the games. We are all ready to watch football, period.
Totally agree. All right, more to come. Thanks to Nicole Auerbach for joining us. When we come back on the other side, is there a potential impact in the scheduling for the ACC this year, the challenge of it? Boy, the league has really stepped up into top five games in the last 25 years to start seasons. Georgia, Clemson, no exception. We'll get to it next on Packer and Durham.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham on a Monday. It is show faux. That's it. Moses Malone.
Moses Malone
show. Faux. Love it. Remember when he did that? It was so fantastic. Did he do that with Musburger? I think he did.
It was awesome.
It was awesome. That's right.
That I was think great. So, yeah. Hey, by the way, real quick, before we get going, just wanted you to know that
the culprit. This is the culprit.
Red Auerbach, Chester Fuller, all getting coverage.
Mountain lion.
Here's
Look at
the man.
Claws. Look at those talons.
You'll say hello. Oh,
he's
yeah, right
me,
to
he's
the face.
The Heisman
always
pose.
Good, isn't it?
Yeah, poof, right in the face.
Yeah, he's giving me the Heisman pose.
In the face. In the face.
How you doing, big boy? Huh? How
you doing? Better put him down before he knocks you off
morning?
The air
yeah.
again. It's the reason you were off the air for 20 minutes. Cat just over there gnawing
no,
on some wire. You'll be back
no,
here tomorrow.
Somebody at another channel didn't like things we were talking about, and they took our line.
That's embarrassing.
yes, it is embarrassing.
Can we get this thing back
oh,
on track?
That's funny.
You know, you come back here to the
All
studio
right.
tomorrow here in the basement. We won't have any of these technical marvels of technology and all this nonsense.
That's right.
Ridiculous.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
All right. We talked about this at the top of the show. Worth mentioning here. And then we got a note for you coming up before we're done today at 10 o'clock about basketball and the impact of some of this, which I found very interesting from some of the folks at on3.com. Clemson, Georgia on September the 4th at 7:30 on ABC, the big Saturday night primetime game. Here's what you need to know. Fifth time two AP teams have squared off in week one over the last 25 years. Of those five, three have involved an ACC team. You go back to 1999. Penn State, Arizona was the first one in the last 25 years. 2004, Miami, Florida State. You had LSU, Oregon, 2011. 2017, you had Florida State, Bama at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. And now you get Clemson, Georgia in Uptown Charlotte in the Duke Mayo Kickoff Classic. The ACC's not been scared to run right there at the top to start a year, Pac.
No, the league has done, I think the ACC has done a tremendous job, even in recent memory, of signing quality non-conference schedules. And, you know, but it goes back to, hey, signing it's one thing. Now you got to go win some of these games. Again, I go back to changing the narrative in this conference. Clemson's done a brilliant job transforming from Clemsoning to, well, you don't want to mess with those dudes. They'll come beat you. So Clemson's done a brilliant job from that perspective. Now it's time for Miami, Florida State, North Carolina, Virginia Tech, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, to step up and win games of note. And, you know, you can't talk it. You got to walk it. And so guess what, Wes?
Yep.
Week one gives you some more ample opportunities across the board in this league for Florida State. They got a great opportunity taking on Notre Dame on a Sunday night. Can't wait to see that thing. Louisville's going to get a chance to play Ole Miss from the SEC on a Monday night. We're all excited about the ACC game between Virginia Tech and North Carolina. But there are going to be multiple opportunities through the month of September that the conference has stepped up to play a good non-conference slate. Now you got to go win some of these games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. And I think that when we start talking about the history of this, and, you know, we can go back to the 04 Miami Florida State game. And for ACC fans, this is an important game because this was, you know, Miami's first game in the ACC. And the Canes scored 10 in the fourth to win the game 16-10. Why is it important from a historical standpoint? Because it was the opener for the season. And this was what we thought we were going to see. This is what we thought this was the first. I remember the first of two potential matchups. Kind of like what we're talking about Clemson and Georgia. 4 versus 5, Pac. I remember this thinking, man, the ACC's in the football business.
Oh, they were. Still are. And I would have bet a year's salary to anybody that was in the mood that we would have seen Miami, Florida State multiple times in Charlotte or anywhere else that the championship game was played at the time in the early parts. And we still haven't seen it. Miami's only been there one time. As Joe Zagacki said, one double-digit winning season. It was Mark Richt a couple years ago, and they rolled in here and got beat by 100 to Clemson. And amazingly, the Canes have only been here once. We've still never seen Florida State-Miami in the ACC championship game. And I told you, when they made that announcement, you know, 16, 17, 18 years ago that Miami's joined the league, you would have thought, oh, my goodness, we're going to get Miami-Florida State every year twice? I mean, you just assumed that was going to be the case, and we're still waiting. So who knows, Wes? Again, you just never – that's why I always say you could speculate all day long what you think, woulda, coulda, and shoulda. Let's let the games play out and see where this thing goes.
Well, and the 2017 Florida State-Alabama game, of course, was the one that, you know, maybe was a precursor to a tough run for Jimbo Fisher in that season because Alabama won the game. Late in the ball game, DeAndre Francois went down with the injury, and it seemed to kind of derail Florida State's entire season. And, Pack, it's the reason I made the statement earlier in the hour with Joe about you can't let that first 60 minutes of football make or break your season. I'd say the same thing about, you know, Clemson, Georgia, and although Carolina, Virginia Tech kind of fits a different mold, I certainly think it applies to Louisville and Ole Miss and Florida State, Notre Dame on that Sunday night.
Well, I think everybody, they talk about, hey, we're going to win the national championship. You know, Clemson, Georgia has national championship feel to it, right? I mean, those are two teams, regardless of outcome, you may see them play twice. They're both good enough to, whoever loses is good enough to run a table and get in the college football playoff. We know how great Alabama is. Nobody needs to tell you that. But Miami, an incredible opportunity, right? I mean, Derek King looks and sounds like he's 100%. The Canes have talked it about, hey, you know, we're ready now to get back into that conversation. The preseason top 15, a brilliant golden opportunity for the Canes. We'll see what they do. And for Florida State, it's still part of the rebuild, but that Sunday night in week one when Notre Dame comes to town, you know what? You're going to know exactly how good your football team is. Brian Kelly's done a great job. He's recruited well. They've been to two college football playoffs here in recent memory. You know what Notre Dame's all about. So, again, the ACC's got great opportunities, Wes, moving forward. Now you got to go walk it. We'll see.
Yep. Yep. And of note, it didn't fall in our 25-year window, but we even discussed in the opening hour the Pitt North Carolina game in 1982 was a 7-6 struggle at Three Rivers. Dan Marino threw four picks and 125 yards of offense. Great defensive battle that night with Fodes Fazio and Dick Crum's team, and a one-point game between two top five teams to start the 82 season. If you take Mac Brown's 97 team we talked about when those rankings first came out, Pac, top 10 for the first time since 97. Prior to 97, that 82 Carolina team was the last crowd to go into the top five in a preseason.
Well, you asked me, you know, where were you when that game was being played? I told you I was a sophomore at Clemson, and I think two or three days prior to that, you had a I don't think it was a top 10 game, because I think one of those teams, I'm talking about Clemson, Georgia, in Athens, the two teams that had won the previous two national championships. Again, 1980 for the Dogs, 1981 for Clemson. They hooked up in Athens, another low-scoring game. It was like 13-7, something like that. Blocked punt late. Again, I think I can't remember where they were ranked. Obviously, we're not ranked in the top five. Brooks just told us Clemson was 11, Georgia was 7. That's the game I remember, because I remember us having a big party watching that game, and we're totally bummed out how that thing finished up. So when you asked me about Pitt, North Carolina, I was like, yeah, whatever. Whoever those guys are, forget that. And Clemson, Georgia was going on. So, again, I'm just ready for football. I think like I said it 100 times today, we're just ready to watch games. And you get it with week zero this week in college football, but for the Atlantic Coast Conference, it all gets started in 10 days when Packer and Durham roll into Raleigh to start things there at Carter-Finley. That's the deal.
There you go. Coming back, conference cuts. First, a quick reminder that tonight is Miami. Wednesday night, the ACC football road trip moves along to Tallahassee, Florida, kids. Yep. 7 o'clock Eastern, Mike Norvell and the Seminoles welcome our ACC Network crew for a full preview, including that Sunday night game against Notre Dame. We'll have Coach Norvell's exclusive comments and more right here on ACC Network and on the ESPN app. Sit tight when we come back. This week's edition of Conference Cuts on a Monday. We had some scrimmages. We got some audio from some scrimmages. Coach is next when Packer and Durham continues.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Packer and Durham on a Monday, 10 days away from a road trip and kicking off the 21 ACC football season. We will be there. Cannot wait to get to Raleigh. Check out the new pedicure on Tuffy, the wolf pup, so you can hang out with us and not scar us to death like Clifford did Wes there a second ago with the Heisman pose. Appreciate Nicole Arbach.
It was all good.
Nicole brought all in red, looking good, like $1 million. And Joe Zagacki with the Hawaiian tropical U shirt, perfect, from Coral Gables. All right, Wes, time for conference cuts.
First stop is Tigertown. Dabo Swinney talking about the second scrimmage and Justin Ross's full participation.
Just popped right back up, and he took a couple good hits. He just popped right back up and just kept on to the next play. I mean, he had a great day. But it really couldn't have worked out any better as far as, what I needed and, you know, what he needed. You know, I mean, he's been ready to go since last spring in his mind as far as ready to go play. But it's been a long process, and today was finally the day. He's done some thud work, but today was finally the day to really let him get. I think he went about 12 plays of live, had three great catches, but he got knocked around a few times, and just I don't think I've ever seen a player so happy to get tackled. But he was great. He was ready to go. So just a blessing to be able to see him out there today. Everybody was excited for him.
Wes, there's a lot of really good wide receivers in this league. I think folks maybe have forgotten about Justin Ross. He is going to be a problem for everybody, including Georgia, in 2 weeks. He is a great football player.
Totally agree. Off to Virginia on the next stop, Bronco Mendenhall. Remember, Lavelle Davis is out for the start of the season, could return in November with the ACL injury. Bronco Mendenhall knows he's got a big-time pass catcher in Billy Kemp, who not only does those type things, but also just makes great contributions to his program.
Billy, I think, is the epitome of what I'd like in terms of competitive mindset. He won't back down from anyone, and there's no situation or stage that's too big. He loves to compete. He plays right to the edge of the rules, but within the rules, and he wants to win, and he's capable. He makes the very most of the resources and abilities that he has, and he's one of the best practice players and hardest practice players I've ever coached, and so I really like him.
Wes, that was one of the guys that you had mentioned. That was one of the guys that you had mentioned a couple of weeks ago in one of our Q&As. You mentioned, hey, keep an eye on Billy Kemp because he's going to get opportunities. He's going to touch the football. Mm-hmm. And by the way, he catches everything that comes his way. He is. It seems like he's primed for a monster year in 21.
Well, I think he does all the stuff inside where we got to Lavelle Davis being, you know, a downfield guy. I think Billy Kemp is really the most veteran piece they've got in the throw game. I think he's a fascinating prospect to keep an eye on, at least early in the season for Virginia. Jeff Hafley, by the way, at Boston College is kind of going through the same process here. He wants to talk about guys that are maybe not so obvious. We know how good Zay Flowers is. Kobe White's back. But Jeff Hafley says, hey, wait a second now. We're more than just Zay Flowers.
I think all those guys will take pressure off, honestly. If you look at our wide receiver group, you mentioned Kobe. You should definitely take some of the pressure off. And then you get Jalen Gill, and you get C.J. Lewis, and you get Jelani, and you get Ethan. And, you know, I don't even know who else I'm missing. Some of those freshmen are starting to jump out. Taji, I mean, all those guys got to work together. And we need to find roles for them and get them the football because we're going to need them all.
Wes, I like their core wide receivers. And I'll tell you what else I like. Number one, a really good offensive line and a dude under center who can get them the ball. Phil Jakovic can do that. BC not getting a whole lot of love in preseason polls. I'm just telling you, keep an eye on BC. Keep an eye on Pitt. Keep an eye on NC State. Can't find them in the top 25, but it would not surprise me if they appeared at some point in time.
Yeah, no, and I think that when you're talking about Boston College, remember the change was so drastic from a year ago, from the run, the 22 personnel, the just run it down your throat mentality to the sling it mentality. Would it surprise you if we get a little more, you know, back to the middle of the road this year? Wouldn't surprise me.
Well, I think that if Jeff Hafley could get that, he would. He'd love balance. But if it turns out, hey, guess what? Mm-hmm. It's not quite there yet up front running the football. They can throw it. And I think they can throw it with even though they lost Hunter Long, the tremendous tight end. Their wide receiver core is really talented.
Yeah. Hunter Long with a catch the other night for the Dolphins in the middle of the Falcons secondary, by the way.
He's wide open, too. Wide open.
No. He was well defended. He made a heck of a catch.
You guys even paying attention down there in Atlanta? Scott, I'm just asking.
Scott, off to Louisville for Scott Satterfield. Remember the other day Brian Brown used John Gelott as a guy to keep an eye on? Remember that name? Mm-hmm. Big guy, you know, going to be a factor of what they're doing defensively. Well, Scott Satterfield used an interesting term to describe Jalen Carter's abilities.
He's got a lot of ability. He's got great size. I mean, he is, you take his shirt off. I mean, he is rocked up. He's a very mature body. He's got really good hands, and he is fast. And I'll tell you what else he does. He practices fast. You know, we track all our players with the catapult system. I mean, he's one of these guys that is practicing really, really fast, and he's going for a long period of time. He's a guy who I really think will benefit. And once we start narrowing everything down to game plan and figure that out, then he's going to be in the mix. He's not scared to mix it up blocking. I think he's a guy, he can knock the top off, you know. And then we saw the other day in practice when he made a great catch. I think we put it out on social media. You know, we went over the top of somebody and made that catch. So he's got a lot of ability.
You know what, Wes? Jalen, he's got stuff in his neck. That's what he's got. Got stuff in his neck. That's what I learned last week talking to Coach Brown from Louisville. You better have stuff in your neck.
Pack, When was the last time anybody ever referred to you or me as rocked up?
I can answer that. Friday night, I was referred that way only because I was looking for another ice cube. I was rocked up. Right after the radio show Friday night.
I knew that was coming.
I was rocked up.
I knew it was coming.
Just one rock.
I know. I remember.
Just one. All right. That's rocked up.
Just one.
That's my definition.
Yeah. off the Chapel Hill, Mac Brown's been talking about Jeremiah Gimmel. And he's been talking a lot about him in camp, and that continued with his comments over the weekend.
I went to Iraq in, I think it was 2009, and spent 10 days on the front lines. And I met with General Odonero, who I just love and admire very much. And he was pretty much in charge of our troops in Iraq at that time. And I asked him, do you recruit leadership or do you teach it? And he said, Coach, we have academies to teach it. That's what we do. And you better teach every one of your players, because even a guy with good qualities might not know how to lead. Jeremiah, he's got it all. He's soft-spoken until he needs to be. The other day that he didn't like the way he saw the defense play an inside drill. So he after I said, get in there, Jeremiah, and break them down, he talked to him about 5 minutes and chewed them out before he broke them down. And they listened. And he only played about 14 plays yesterday. So we know what he can do. We're trying to keep him fresh, but he is definitely the leader of that defense. And we talk about the cliche coach on the field. I've never seen a better one than Jeremiah Gimmel.
Hmm. Oh, Mac. And you know, Mac's seen some pretty good players now. I mean, Mac's no rookie. So that's a pretty strong statement right there.
Yes, it is. And, yeah, we've heard a lot about Gimmel, but there's some awfully high praise from the Tar Heel head coach. Gimmel and Eugene Asante are going to be a major focal point on opening night in Blacksburg for the Tar Heel defense. I'm getting the sense Carolina may have more depth on that side of the ball than maybe we first thought. We all know the offense is back, and we're looking to see who the key replacements are for the combination at running back and the wide receivers and all those things. But realistically, Pac, we've talked about this. The next step involves what the defense has, right?
That's right.
And if they've got depth on that side of the ball, that's an awfully good indication for Jay Bateman, their coordinator, but also for the Tar Heels as a whole.
Well, we're living in an offensive world right now in college football, but I assure you that if you want to become elite and championship worthy, you better be pretty good on that side. You better be able to tackle people, especially in space. But, boy, that is a monster game in 11 days with North Carolina going to Lane Stadium. Enter Sandman, and here come the Hokies. Can't wait. It's going to be a good one.
Uh-huh. Our last stop is in this edition of Conference Cuts is where the Wednesday night ACC Network football road trip is, and that's Tallahassee. Florida State's yet to name a starting quarterback for the Notre Dame game on that Sunday before Labor Day, but Mike Norvell says – Chubba Purdy is making key contributions in practice, too.
It was something that we wanted to see McKenzie and Jordan really get the bulk of the reps. And you look back at the scrimmage and you throughout the first week, and they were pushing probably 80% of it as we were rolling. So, you know, Chubba and Tate, you know, had spare opportunities. But as we've gone into the second week, we've really wanted to up that look. I think it's been good. It's been an opportunity with McKenzie and Jordan to allow them to deload at different times and kind of go through their process in preparing for September 5th. I'm excited about the steps that I've seen. I'm so excited about the opportunities and the situations that Chubba has been put in, because once again, he went basically the last year without a whole lot of practice. And, this has been really good for him. He's making strides. He's having some very positive moments and then some moments to learn from. But, he's approaching practice the right way. And, I like the growth that I'm seeing.
Coach, don't do it. Hmm. Don't announce that starter till you come out of the huddle September the 5th against the Irish. That quarterback room is pretty good in Tallahassee right now. They've got some options. I tell you what else I learned from the conference cuts, Wes, that it needs to be sponsored by Gillette. Because did anybody shave? Did we get any head coach? Maybe did Dabo's normally shave? It looks like those guys have been out on the
set. Mac looked good.
Mac, okay, so we had two guys that shaved. Everybody else looked like they'd been on the seven seas, right? Out there, high tide.
7-6.
That's what it looks like. Everybody looks like a captain. Got my boat. Let's go. I am so ready for football. Man, these conference cuts. Every time I hear guys talking like that, can we fast forward the clock to 10 days? Can we get to Raleigh and start this thing? I am ready. I am ready to go.
All right. Sit tight. When we come back, we got some football scores. Just that other kind of football.
Football.
Yep. Ladies are underway, and it's been impressive so far. And I hate to tell you, we may have already seen the best goal of the year.
What?
Next.
Already?
The Packer and Durham Podcast. The Packer and Durham Podcast.
Durham, we got football in the brain, but I tell you what, ACC women's soccer has come out of the gate smoking, Wes. I mean, the league's been ridiculous. In fact, it's almost been embarrassing what they've done to people.
22-0-2 is the Atlantic Coast Conference to start women's soccer in 2021. First of all, let's give congrats to Pittsburgh. Beat Oklahoma State 3-2, first win over a ranked opponent in 13 years. Oklahoma State came in number 16 in the country, so congratulations to the Panthers. Syracuse, a winner, 2-0 over the Fighting Seth Greenbergs of Fairleigh Dickinson. Duke beat Washington 2-1. UNC eliminates Arkansas 1-0. Florida State a winner, 4-0 over Alabama. Virginia shuts out West Virginia, 1-0. 0-0 Notre Dame, Indiana. Virginia Tech 1, College of William and Mary 0. Wake 3, High Point 0. Miami beat FAU 1-0. And Clemson quadrupled Loyola of Maryland, 4-0. Okay? But we're going to roll the videotape from Tallahassee. Maria Alagoa, a freshman from Portugal, in a 4-0 win over Roll Tide Roll. Bang!
Goal of the year? Are we already going there? I mean, we're only 8 days into the season. We're already going now? Goal of the year?
It's 30 yards. It's 30 yards.
No, I'm not downplaying the goal. Florida State's, we've talked about, as good as this league is, it goes through Tallahassee until proven otherwise. Virginia, North Carolina expected to be outstanding. The league's got great depth, and 22-0-2 speaks volumes right out of the gate. But it's still early to start talking goal of the year. Now, if you want to mark the tape, is that going to be our first mark the tape? This one right here? Goal of the year?
That's a long way now. That's 25 yards.
All right. I'm impressed. But I'm not giving out any hardware after just 2 weeks now. Too early for that.
Okay.
In my opinion. Now, it could be on the short list at the end of the year.
Tough judge.
I'm not a tough judge. We're just getting started. You don't know what this thing's going to look like. I would mark the tape and put that as a potential short lister for goal of the year. Is that fair?
Here's what we'll do. We'll get Jen Hildreth and Jonathan Yardley and a lot of these people involved in our soccer coverage. And at the end of the regular season, we'll compile all the goals of the year, the ones that we think are the favorites, and then we'll, let them come on and talk to you about what they are, and then you decide which one. How's that?
That works. I'd mark the tape and put that on the short list, and, that's now becomes a standard moving forward. But I'm not going to hand out that. Everybody stop. That's the goal of the year. It's too early for that. But, boy, the league looks good, though, don't they? League looks really good.
Oh, yeah. Preseason volleyball poll is out. Came out Friday, about 10:05. Just kidding. It didn't. It was later in the day on Friday. Dan Fisher and Pittsburgh are the preseason favorites. And, of course, they got 13 of the 15 first-place votes. So the Panthers, who lost some valuable leadership a year ago, are still the favorites to win the Atlantic Coast Conference this year.
No surprise, right? They've been terrific. I know Louisville had an awesome year last year, getting hardware and all that good stuff. Kayla Lund, one of our all-time favorites. Yep. Syracuse surprised everybody early last year when they knocked off Pitt. So, like I said, man, football's getting started in 10 days. Sports are getting cranked up. It's all good, man. But again, we're still in this pandemic. I will continue to emphasize it. Be smart out there, fans. Be smart.
Yep. As we celebrate our second year anniversary today on the Atlantic Coast Conference Television Network, this seems like a really good time to offer a friendly reminder to you that once again, we'll be looking for the great catches in college football involving ACC players this fall. We like to call it Wide Receiver U. We showcase it on Mondays typically. Maybe the first week it might be Tuesday. Nonetheless, it's your opportunity to contribute to the show. Don't forget, use the hashtag PackerInDurham while you're watching the game. If there's a catch made, let us know about it. Our crack staff compiles the best. And then you, the discerning fans, get to vote on it. That's the way Wide Receiver U works every week.
And it should be noted, last year, Andrew Booth won it twice. So it can be an interception. It could be a big boy surprise. Mm-hmm. I mean, it doesn't have to be an offensive catch is the point. Because we had some defensive players make some plays last year and won the award.
Aleem McNeil, big man touchdown at Virginia, was a winner.
Yep.
Don't forget, I think Kenny Pickett also won a Wide Receiver U last year, did he not?
And Booth won it twice, right? Andrew Booth had two of them.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah. And this year, when we announce each weekly winner, they're going to receive a hearty congratulations from Packer and Durham.
Well, we hope the sales department gets cranked up and maybe you get a sponsorship deal out of it. I mean, we do have name, image, and likeness in play now. We're not giving out these free parking spots for radio stations, so you're not getting those. That only goes to terrestrial radio, the free parking spots. And don't ask about hats or mugs.
By the way.
Because we don't have any of those. Don't have any of those.
No.
Not in the budget.
Quick report here before we go off the air. Joe Zagacki has already sent us a picture from the beach in Hollywood, Florida. Man was on the show at 8. He was on the beach less than an hour later. Joe, thank you. Appreciate that. Nicole Auerbach of The Athletic, thank you for your time today. Great conversation. The road trip tonight is in Coral Gables at 7 o'clock. Dallin Cuff is there along with Coach Rick at 8 o'clock. All access with Miami football premieres right here on the ACC Network. Thanks to Drew Brooks, Josh Macri, Chrissy Velez for a great day. Matt and Hank on the back row. Everybody in the bunkers. I'll be in the basement tomorrow, Pack. See you at 7 a.m.
Tune into Packer and Durham weekday mornings from 7 to 10 Eastern for the best conversations about everything from the ACC. Find it on the ACC Network, SiriusXM Channel 371, and streaming on the ESPN app.